Ghosts, the Bermuda Triangle, ESP, the supernatural, UFOs, mystery and imagination.
Hello, I'm Rick Young. Join me as we explore the unexplained on Mysteries and Imagination.
Hi, this is Rick Young, and once again we're reading from Charles Berlitz's The Bermuda Triangle. And we left off with the Sea of Lost Ships, ships that were lost in the Bermuda Triangle. And I start with, deserted ships in the Triangle area have appeared on numerous other occasions. The German bark Freya, sailing from Manzanillo, Cuba to ports in Chile in October 1902, was found abandoned and listing, with the pages of the ship's calendar torn off until October 4th. At this point in time, a violent earthquake had taken place in Mexico, and it has been predicted that the seismic shock caused the formation of a huge tidal wave, which swept away the crew of the Freya, or perhaps partially capsized it, and that it subsequently partially righted itself again when the sea was calm. Tales of empty ships found in the Sargasso Sea or neighboring parts of the Atlantic almost invariably mention the Mary Celeste, perhaps the area's most famous derelict. The incident did not occur in the Sargasso Sea, although the Mary Celeste passed north of it on her way to a spot north of the Azores, where she was found by the British brig, the Dea Gracia, in November 1872. The latter vessel, noting the erratic course of the Mary Celeste, hailed her and, obtaining no reply, boarded her and subsequently took the Mary Celeste as a prize. The boarding party found her sails were set and her cargo of casks of alcohol was safely stowed in the hold. There were sufficient supplies of food and water, but her complement of 10 persons had disappeared, including the captain, his wife, and baby daughter. Money, pipes, personal possessions, and even the ship's log were left on board, although the sextant was missing. The main cabin had been boarded up as if someone had wished to create a stronghold to repel attackers. This mystery of the sea has been retold and embroidered and been the subject of court trials and investigations, but still has not been solved. The disappearance of the crew has been variously explained as attack of pirates, mutiny, and flight after killing the captain, fear of cargo about to explode, or sudden knowledge of contraband and dangerous cargo, to an outbreak of plague, or hijacking by supposed friends. Lloyd's of London, who paid the insurance, inclines the theory that a sudden but short fire of alcohol cargo may have frightened the crew off the ship and then gone out, given the properties of alcohol for sudden flare-up, burning with a blue flame and then extinguishing itself. By the time the short flare-up subsided, the crew may have been unable to return to the ship from the lifeboat. That's just one possibility. Another possible explanation of irrational behavior on the part of the crew might consist of the presence of ergot, which is found among bread. Bread tainted with the growth of this ergot has affected crews in the past, causing violent madness and death preceded by irrational behavior. A collective insanity brought on by this condition might have induced abandonment of the ship in panic and may explain some other crew disappearances on quote-unquote ghost ships in various seas of the world. Harold Wilkins, in his book Strange Mysteries of Time and Space, makes a good case for the possibility of the ships having been boarded and taken at sea by persons already known to the ship's complement, with the implication that the crew was disposed of and the empty ship was then rediscovered at sea and taken as a prize. In developing this theory, Wilkins points out the many inconsistencies in the stories of the captain and the crew of the Dea Gratia, and the fact that the Dea Gratia was moored alongside the Mary Celeste for over a week in the New York harbor and sailed shortly after the ill-fated vessel's departure. After prize proceedings, the refurbished Mary Celeste went to sea again, but soon acquired the reputation of being a jinx ship, causing misfortune, destruction, and death among those who sailed on her, until her final master, Captain Gilman Parker, after supplying over-generous liquor rations to all hands, and above all to himself, deliberately, as it is said, sailed the Mary Celeste onto a rocky reef near Haiti, and so ended her unlucky career. Other deserted ships with less indications of what happened to their crews include the Carol Deering, which ran aground in February 1921 on the North Carolina shore with no indication of what happened to the crew, except that they had abandoned or been taken off the ship while a meal was about to be served. Another ship called the John and Mary, found deserted in April 1932, 50 miles south of Bermuda. The Gloria Colette, a 125-foot schooner, found deserted at sea on February 3, 1940, and the Rubicon, a Cuban vessel found abandoned, except for a hungry dog, off Key Largo, Florida on October 22, 1944. The last entry in her log was for September 26 and noted that the ship was then in Havana. The missing lifeboat suggested that the crew had left in a hurry. Ivan Sanderson has observed that in cases of crew abandoning a ship, it is most unusual for them not to take the ship's mascot or their own individual pets. It is suggested that the crew was forcibly removed, perhaps by entities who wanted only specimens capable of oral communication. Sanderson further comments that it is worthy of note that while cats, dogs, and canaries have been found on ships from which the crews have disappeared, parrots seem to vanish with the humans. Perhaps one might imagine, because coherent or incoherent speech is an easy way to recognize the dominant species of the planet Earth. Crews and passengers have frequently vanished from many smaller boats, later found abandoned and adrift, such as the yacht Connemara IV, found 400 miles southwest of Bermuda, September 1955, empty of passengers and crew. The 60-foot Maplebank, found drifting north of Bermuda on June 30, 1969, with no trace of survivors. The Vagabond, a 12-meter owner-operated yacht found adrift but otherwise shipshape west of the Azores on July 6, 1969, with no sign of its owner, Captain Wallace P. Williams, or its crew. Some boats have disappeared on fairly short trips, such as the case of the Al Snyder. Al Snyder, a well-known jockey who took several friends on a cabin cruiser out of Miami on March 5, 1948, to go fishing at Sandy Key, and although the yacht was later found, the occupants had disappeared. While certain abandoned small boats found on the high seas after the Cuban Revolution may have had something to do with the activities of escaping Cubans and those pursuing them, one striking disappearance had nothing to do with the Cuban situation. The incident of the Witchcraft is an outstanding example of lightning-like sudden disappearance of a small craft not only within sight of its port, but while located at one of the harbor's buoys. Dan Burak, owner of Witchcraft, which incidentally was reputed to be unsinkable, had invited a priest, Father Pat Hogan, to see the Christmas lights of Miami from offshore on Christmas Eve, 1967. They proceeded through calm seas to about 1 mile from the shore and stopped to admire the lights from the vicinity of buoy number 7. At this point, Barak made a single unexpected call for help to the Coast Guard, giving his exact position. It took an alerted Coast Guard vessel only 20 minutes to reach buoy number 7, but when it arrived, there was no sign of the witchcraft. When the search was finally suspended, a Coast Guard spokesman stated somewhat paradoxically, "We presume they are missing, but not lost at sea." The list of cargo ships, fishing vessels, and pleasure craft that have vanished with their crews is impressive. Most of the ships have disappeared in good weather and have left no floating wreckage, oil slicks, lifeboats, life jackets, or bodies either in the sea or washed up on the neighboring beaches. Like the disappearing planes, the ships sent no SOS messages and reported nothing wrong over their transmitters. These vanishing ships have included the Cotopaxi, a freighter bound for Havana from Charleston in 1925, the Sudafico, a freighter sailing south from Port Newark in 1926, the Stavanger in 1931 with 43 persons aboard, which was last located south of Cat Island, and the freighter Anglo-Australian in March 1938 with a crew of 39, which radioed all well as it passed the Azores on its way west. A spectacular last radio message was received from the Japanese freighter Rafakumaru, presumably at the time of its disappearance between the Bahamas and Cuba during the winter, 1924. The words of radio messages were unusual call for help. "Dega-like danger now. Come quickly. We cannot escape." Without, however, specifying what the danger was, if the danger was a sudden storm or unexpected waterspout, it would seem normal for the radio officer to give precise information which might later serve to aid rescue operations, rather than to indulge in imaginative comparisons, however striking. Danger like dagger now. Lost ships in the Atlantic during the war years had varied and, for sufficient reasons, including submarines, mines, bombs, sabotage, to be lost without a trace. But considerably after the war, large ships continued to disappear within the Bermuda Triangle area. The freighter Sandra, bound for Puerto Cabo in Savannah in June 1950, carrying a cargo of insecticide, passed by St. Augustine, Florida, in good weather, and thereafter all contact was lost and never reestablished. It is of interest, in the case of the SS Santa and others, that most of the American ships have been disappeared at sight of land. Farther south than Snowboy, a fishing vessel with 40 persons on board was lost without trace or explanation in 1963 between Kingston, Jamaica, and Northeast Cay. Among the many pleasure boats reported missing or missing without a trace within the area, perhaps an average of one a month, is the case of the Revenach, a 46-foot racing yacht which had won prizes in the Newport Bermuda race, which disappeared during a short cruise between Key West and Fort Lauderdale between Christmas and New Year 1967, a fatal time, as we have seen before, for disappearances. This caused a particular comment for several reasons. In the first place, the yacht was designed for racing in all weather. Secondly, Captain Conover, the name Revenick was Conover spelled backward, he was the skipper and owner and was an excellent sailor and commodore of the Cruising Club of America. too good a sailor to risk an accident on such a relatively short cruise. In any case, since he was sailing so close to land, some vestige of the yacht would have been found along the shore had it struck a reef. In an attempt to give some logic for the boat's disappearance, the then-yachting editor of the New York Herald Tribune suggested the possibility that a freighter known to be in the area at the time had simply run over the yacht at night, sending its crew to the bottom without notice or trace. More than a half a century before Conover's disappearance on the Revenick, another well-known sailor, Joshua Slocum, the first man to circumnavigate the world solo, undertook a second voyage in 1909 on his 37-foot yawl, the Spray. He was reported to have entered the Triangle area, sailing south from Miami, and shortly afterwards, he and the Spray disappeared forever. The disappearance of small and medium-sized craft within the Triangle is no doubt due in many cases to weather conditions, especially in the winter, when they become even more unpredictable than usual because of the cold Arctic air masses meeting the warm air from the tropics. This could have been the case with the schooner Windfall. 56 feet disappeared off Bermuda in 1962. The 55-foot Evangeline en route from Miami to the Bahamas also in 1962. The 58-foot Enchantress disappeared en route from Charleston to St. Thomas in 1946, and the 30-foot sketch Dancing Feather disappeared between Nassau and North Carolina in 1964, all of which occurred in winter months, when the large waves whipped up by unexpected storms could have caused a small craft to founder even before a radio message could be sent. But this, of course, would not explain the disappearance of ships in calm waters or the several occasions when large freighters or Navy ships have disappeared without a trace. The loss of the 425-foot freighter Marine Sulphur Queen with a crew of 39 and on about February 2, 1963 is particularly striking because of the size of the vessel. It was bound for Norfolk, Virginia, from Beaumont, Texas, with a cargo of 15,000 long tons of molten sulfur, which were carried in steel tanks. The weather was good. The ship was last heard of from a point near Dry Tortugas in the Gulf of Mexico, an area in or near the Triangle, according to its somewhat elastic boundaries. Paradoxically, the vessel was first missed not by its owners, but by a brokerage house because of a chain of unusual circumstances. One of the seamen on the Marine Sulphur Queen had been speculating in the stock market, specifically in wheat futures, a pastime that normally requires rather close contact with one's broker, and had placed a buy order before the ship left port. The brokerage house had executed the order and cabled him with confirmation. When no response was received, the brokerage house informed the ship's owner that they could not reach the vessel, the first indication that all was not well, and the incident that initiated an unsuccessful search for the Marine Sulphur Queen, launched by the Coast Guard on February 6. Its planes and ships ranged from the Virginia Capes to the eastern part of the Gulf of Mexico. Although the search was discontinued on February 15th, 5 days later, the Navy reported finding a life jacket from the Marine Sulphur Queen 15 miles out at sea, south of Key West. This initiated a new hunt, which found only one life jacket. A subsequent investigation dealt with a wide range of possibilities. Explosion of the sulfur, capsizing hitting a mine, capture and confiscation by Cubans or Cuban synthesizers. A Marine Board of Investigation noted that the Marine Sulphur Queen had disappeared at sea without the transmission of a radio distress message, but offered neither solution nor theory concerning this disaster. Stories about the Bermuda Triangle were once more revived when the atomic submarine USS Scorpion, carrying a crew of 99, failed to return to its home port in Norfolk, Virginia, on May 28, 1968. It had sent its last routine message back to its base on May 21st from 250 miles west of the Azores. On June 5th, it was presumed lost. But several months later, a naval oceanographic research ship located some wreckage 460 miles south of the Azores at a depth of 10,000 feet. As underwater photographs seem to establish the identity of the Scorpion, it cannot be said to have vanished, although the reason for its loss at the edge of the Sargasso Sea cannot be ascertained. If there is, as some investigators of the Bermuda Triangle phenomena have suggested, an intelligence-directed reason behind many of the disappearances or near disappearances, the loss of several atomic submarines in the Western Atlantic suggests wider possibilities than simply equipment malfunction. If the area of disappearing ships is projected into the Gulf of Mexico, as John Spencer suggests, a 1966 disappearance of a vessel there could be considered, especially in view of the latter, to be discussed as an escape from whatever menace and planes are facing in the area. It concerns the 67-foot tugboat Southern Cities, which left Freeport, Texas on October 29, 1966, with a 210-foot barge in tow. When the Southern Cities did not make its daily report by radio, an air search was initiated which located the barge, complete with its cargo of chemicals, undisturbed, with its tow line intact and connected to its chain, but no tugboat or tugboat crew. An excerpt from the report of the Maritime Board of Inquiry of the Coast Guard might be applied to any or all of the numerous planes and ships that have disappeared. The failure of the vessel to transmit a distress message appears to justify the conclusion that the loss of the vessel may have occurred so quickly as to preclude the transmission of such a message. More recent disappearances include Ithaca Island, in November 1968, carrying a cargo of grain from Norfolk to Massachusetts, in the Milton Arides in April 1970, en route from New Orleans to Cape Town, with a cargo of vegetable oils and caustic soda, and the Anita, a large cargo ship, 20,000 tons, with a crew of 32, which sailed from Newport News in March 1973, with a cargo of coal for Germany, and was not heard from again. After a characteristically thorough investigation, definitely establishing that the Anita had disappeared, Lloyd's of London paid $3 million insurance to the owners of the Anita. The Anita's sister ship, Norse Variant, which left port within 2 hours before her, radioed that she was sinking 150 miles southeast of Cape May. It was thought at first that all crew members were lost, but one survivor saved himself by clinging to a wooden hatch. He reported that the sinking occurred within minutes. An extremely violent wind suddenly rose, blowing movable objects from the docks. Suddenly, heavy seas swamped the ship, filling the hold, sinking the ship within 5 minutes. Considering the diversity of the cargoes, the many merchant ships have vanished, there seems to be no underlying theme suggesting a connection between cargo and disappearance, such as would be the case with piracy, the danger of explosives, mutiny, and the like. They seem to be random disappearances, but concentrated within the same area. In commenting on the disappearance of ships and planes within the Bermuda Triangle, an information officer of the U.S. 3rd Naval District has expressed a widely held, although certainly unofficial, professional opinion. He said, "It's been a real mystery. Nobody in the Navy sneers at this thing. We've always known there's something strange about this Bermuda Triangle, but nobody has ever found out what it is. There doesn't seem to be any physical or logical reason. It's almost as if these ships had been suddenly covered by some sort of electronic camouflage net." With only a few exceptions, almost all of the incidents concerned with planes and ships have taken place in or in the vicinity of the Sargasso Sea and the coastal waters which border it. Ivan Sanderson, while warning about concentrating area research on any glaring incident, comments on this aggravating aspect of the fact that the position of the Sargasso Sea just happens to coincide with the fact that most of the disappearances of planes and most of the ships of old had occurred within this mysterious lozenge-shaped area. It would seem to be ironic coincidence that this area, feared from ancient times and legends that existed long before it was officially discovered, and later feared for hundreds of years as the Sea of Doom, should conserve its sinister aura and much of its mystery right into the space age, uniting it in wonder individuals who might have been termed opposite ends of the exploration spectrum, such as Columbus to the astronauts of Apollo 12. Columbus on board the Santa Maria was the first observer we have on record to notice the unexplained glowing in the sea. The luminous white water of the Bahamas near the western edges of the Sargasso Sea, which he saw on his first voyage on October 11, 1492, 2 hours after sunset. While the astronauts noted these same luminous streaks or flumes in the water as last lights visible to them from the Earth. This phenomenon has been variously supposed to be marl, stirred up by bonefish or banks of fish or other organic material. Whatever its origin, still unexplained, this strange light is visible from the surface and especially noticeable from the air. And in conclusion, Columbus's first voyage was the occasion for other mysterious incidents, which even today are still the source of comment and wonder in the Triangle area. September 15, 1492, while within the western part of the Sargasso Sea, he and his nervous crew observed a huge bolt of fire shoot across the heavens and fall or disappear into the ocean. Some days later, members of his crews were again filled with dread by the disturbance affecting the ship's compass, an odd forecast on the eve of the discovery of the New World of electromagnetic disturbances still affecting the air and sea navigation within the triangle. And there have been other mysteries connected with the Sargasso Sea that go back as far as Aristotle, who lived from 384 to 322 BC. We'll continue this Sea of Lost Ships from the Bermuda Triangle by Charles Berlitz on the next episode of Mystery and Imagination. Until then, I'm Rick Young saying, pleasant screams.
Fact or fiction? Science or science fiction? Legends and myths? Ghost stories real or imagined? Thank you for joining me on this exploration of the unknown, mystery and imagination.